Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We saw the news of what happened in Minneapolis, where five people were shot by overt racists in a Black Lives Matter demonstration in Minneapolis, which we can talk about. There was another shooting that just took place in demonstrations there last night in Minneapolis. Nobody was shot, but shots did ring out. We've seen the videos of the man who was pummeled at the Trump rally for shouting out, and Trump saying, well, maybe he should have been roughed up. And there's been nine other incidents, at least, that people have counted associated with Trump's candidacy that have led to kind of racist attacks, attacks on Latinos and blacks, on homeless people as well. And we've also seen an uptick in other violence going on in America. Outside of Chicago, a Sikh man was attacked and beaten and called all kinds of racist epithets and screamed at me, it was Bin Laden, because he was wearing a turban and he was a Sikh, which has happened before in the hysteria about the terrorist attacks in America and the world of Islam. So we're going to wrestle all that this hour with our guest, Zoe Carpenter, joins us once again, the nation's assistant Washington editor, Raleigh Hayes, coordinator of Be More Black, which is closely aligned with the Black Lives Matter movement. And as I said, Jeff Singer is going to be joining us here for the whole 2 hours. We'll have commentary as well. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner. Jump onto our Facebook pages. But we really want to hear your ideas about this and why you think this is happening at 410-319-8888. And Zoe and Raleigh, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having us.
So, Zoe, as Washington editor, let me start with you and we'll go right to Raleigh as a member of Black Lives Matter and get his both visceral and intellectual kind of thoughts on what has happened in these attacks. But what are you seeing around the country? What are the responses?
Well, what I'm seeing is that this is not necessarily new. I think the visibility of these kind of attacks is certainly increased and their frequency is increased. But I think these the racist strain of the GOP has been alive and well throughout the administration of Barack Obama. And I think now what's significant is that they have a standard bearer in the form of Donald Trump, who is making these kind of sentiments more respectable and giving them more publicity. So that's what I think the difference is now, is that we have someone who is leading the GOP field who is in, you know, he's condoning these kinds of attacks, in effect.
And Raleigh, I mean, you've been in the heart of this in the community, in these demonstrations, and a leader in these demonstrations as well, locally here, and traveled the country, been to Ferguson, and so talk a bit about your reaction to this.
I definitely agree that this isn't new behavior, it's just more publicized. I will say that I think there are some individuals who, because of Trump and others, you know, making these comments and making them you know, more acceptable, at least in the public eye, they are using these as opportunities because, you know, every day there's, you know, what we call trolls and harassing us on social media and you name it, and, you know, spewing threats. I think that they've gotten to the point now where it's because they can't break our spirit, because there's people who have been out, you know, like the West family, every single day. There's a West Wednesday tonight at 6:30 at City Hall, and they've been out for over, I want to say, 158 weeks now.
158 weeks? Where does that number come from?
That's how many weeks the West family has had a West Wednesday.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I'm sorry. Okay, yes.
And, you know, they can't break our spirits. We're out there. We're going to continue to fight for justice. And, you know, at this point, they're trying to physically attack us to stop us from coming up. And, you know, that's typical in a world in which, you know, there are people who really, truly believe in this kind of hate. And they're trying to figure out how do they stop what they see as an issue.
Well, I think there's a lot happening here. And, we do have a long history in this country, obviously, of racism and racist attacks. But there is something that it's happening in America, and I kind of think in some ways it happened, starting with Katrina, but then kind of really exploded in 2008 with the election of Barack Obama, that has a certain portion of America completely flipped out about the loss, quote-unquote, of their country. and that these attacks are just a piece of it because of the intensity of this movement, especially in the last several years, being built around the exposition of police shootings and killings of young black men, especially, but young black people in particular, in this country. And so, so this is a reaction. I'm curious which, how you all think how this plays out in all of that and what we're actually witnessing here. You know, I mean, as we worry, see the terrorist attacks happening in Paris and Beirut and Bamako and Mali, but right here, we don't want to call these terrorist acts, do we? We want to call them something else, some kind of aberrations of crazy white people. But so what are our thoughts about that? Jeff, you want to lead us off?
Yeah. Well, a couple of issues. One is the terrorist attacks are against middle-class white people, aren't they? And when violence happens to other than the you know, the white hegemony, then it's not terrorism. It's something else. It's thugs. But I'd also like to talk about the fertile ground here for this, what seems like renewed overt racism. Racism, you know, in the U.S. is at least 400 years old, right? But there is now, again, and there has been in periods in the past, a fertile ground for this because people are being immiserated more. White people are being immiserated more. Since 1979, the average household income in the U.S. has declined by 5%. So people are poorer. People have a harder time making their daily lives work, paying their rent or their mortgage, their car payments, getting their kids through college, and we know how those costs have gone up. Housing costs have gone up 384% in the same period that wages have gone down 5%. So there's a real economic base for the anxiety that people feel. And I think that gets sublimated into racism. Mm-hmm. Not that the race isn't institutionalized. It is. But it's more easily accepted now by ordinary people because their lives are so filled with this anxiety and they feel they don't have no control over it.
Ralik, let me ask you, before I turn to Zoe, well, let me turn to Zoe after your comments on what you just heard Jeff say, and then I have a very specific question for you, Ralik, on this.
I guess I agree about the economic basis. I think there's also a demographic basis here. I was revisiting this morning Huasu's essay, The End of White America, which was in The Atlantic in 2009, right around the time of Barack Obama's inauguration. And I think while it's true that economic circumstances have been bad for everyone since the 1970s, but also white America. There is also this the demographic factor, which is that this country is ceasing to be a majority white country, right? And so I think what we're seeing now is, if not a conscious backlash to that, there is this sense that you know, of identity shifting, and I think, you know, kind of the last gasp of the old social order.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is kind of this kind of confluence of both those events. I think that's part. I mean, they play on each other. When you seem to me, when you have the economic downturn, one of the things that has always blocked and stopped America from having a broader movement to change what's happening in this country, despite similar interests around economic fronts, has been race and racism. That has always exploded it open. And Ralik, I'm just curious, you know, as someone who's out in the street all the time in demonstrations, what were your initial reactions when you heard about the shootings?
My first reaction was, can I call in to work black today? And that meant, like, I just was, like, mentally not ready to deal with, like, you know, worrying about people. Like, I have friends in Minneapolis. I have friends in Chicago. The organizing community is actually a pretty tight-knit community if you actually think about it. And it's to the point now, it's like, okay, not only do we need to protect ourselves from the state and, you know, state-sanctioned violence, but we need to protect ourselves from domestic terrorists as well, and not just the cops. And so how do we then talk, you know, be firefighters and put out fires? Because at this point, you know, there's almost a new hashtag every other day, you know, a new name. Like, so how do we be firefighters and support families and communities where they need to be? But how do we also build infrastructure and institutions to protect ourselves, right? And that's really hard to do when you don't really have resources. right? So, like, Minneapolis is amazing in the sense that the community has really rallied around them and, you know, provided resources. They had tents, food, porta potties, fire pits, you name it, they had it, right? But how do we, like, how do we start thinking bigger, like, protecting ourselves from real-life threats? Like, the reason that there wasn't any deaths was because there were protesters out there who, you know, removed the individuals from that area, and they were injured doing so, right? And it really puts in the context putting your body on the line for freedom, because that's what they did.
Folks, your thoughts, 410-319-8888, as we explore what's been exploding in this country recently out of the Trump rallies and what happened in Minnesota, the kind of the depth of the divide I think we're seeing in this country, the chasm is growing deeper. 410-319-8888. Sarah, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good morning, Mr.
Steiner. Good morning.
Yeah, I touched on this issue. I want to clean up this language a little bit.
Okay.
I touched on this issue about 3 or 4 months with you, maybe 6 months ago with you, about this word terrorist, okay? Every time, you know, there is something they call all these modern words, Islamophobia in this country. Anytime it's somebody else other than Caucasian and Christian, it's Muslim terrorists. If all over the world someone committed a crime, the first thing that was named was their religion, what religion did would come out their mouth first and foremost? It would be Christian. The first Christian, the first terrorist in the world was a Christian organization that is still strong called the Ku Klux Klan, okay? Next thing about why this has come up in America, it has never gone anywhere. You have a group of people who always wore their racism or their hatred. That's what it is, hatred. There's nothing wrong with racism. It just means you like your own better, and you should like yourself better than anybody else in the world. They've always worn it on their shoulder, and they always did. You had another group that said, well, this is not civil. We can't let the world know that we like that. And you had other people who just, you know, they try, but it's so obvious they can't even hide it. So this is nothing new. And the whole thing just about killing our boys, just like killing the children in Palestine, they want to stop all non-white races, and they would like to stop the religion of Islam. And that's what's going on in this country. And Donald Trump is, what's the word I need for Donald Trump? He's the voice of America. That's who he is. He's rich. He's white. Hell, let it all hang out. They can't do nothing for me. They say I have freedom of speech, and here it is. The last thing I want to come to is how do people protect themselves when they're protesting innocently? You arm yourself. Like the Constitution says you have a right to, you arm yourself and you protect yourself. The police over here now, the white police, are nothing but the Ku Klux Klan who have changed their uniform like Elijah Muhammad said they would in the 40s, and that's my take on it.
All right, thank you. I think that anybody want to jump in and think about comment on what Sarah said? I mean, I think Trump represents a certain class of people in this country and a certain mindset in this country. He doesn't represent all of anything, I think. But I think that the use of the word terror and terrorism is always relegated to whenever it is on the larger population and on. White people in general, we use the word terror. We didn't call Timothy McVeigh a terrorist, if I remember correctly, in Oklahoma. And said, but terrorism is only used for a certain class of people. But would you all like to comment on what you heard Sarah say? Zoe, Ralik?
Sure, I'll jump in.
Go ahead,
I think one thing it's interesting to note the difference between internal discussions of terrorism within the FBI and the way that we talk about it. The FBI actually does consider white Christian violence to be the most pressing threat for domestic terror. So there's an interesting disconnect between that that perspective within, you know, the country's counterterror apparatus.
Yeah.
And the more public perception of where the threat's coming from.
That people don't. It is true. FBI has put that at the top of the list, and I think that we also don't kind of recognize that almost all the kind of terror threats in this country over the last 15 years have internally come from people who came out of the kind of white Christian fundamentalist movement, and that's not a broad brush about people who are Christian and fundamentalist in their beliefs, but that is what people come out of, and we don't kind of recognize that at all as something to wrestle with in the larger sense. In our society.
Yes, the Southern Poverty Law Center published just last year a study of deaths by terrorists and found that there was double the number caused by the right-wing white Christians than by Muslims.
So I'm going to go back to the phone show. When we come back, I really would like the three of you to wrestle with what might be a political response to all of this from the three of you. 410-319-8888 Tarl on 95. You're on the air.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My point is this. I see where nothing has changed since the 1800s up until now. Basically, we're killing black people. Black people are killing black people. White people are killing black people. And anybody else that has a gun or has a reasonable, just a reasonable reason to kill black people. So nothing has changed. The only thing we get to see that's different now is the video because of dash cams or someone having a cell phone or someone taking a picture. In the early 1900s, used to be a picnic. Yeah, pick a nigger. Excuse my language. But that's what you would do. And they would hang them up and leave them up there for days, almost like beef jerky. So what has changed? We had the guy a few years back that was dragged behind the car. You've had all of these other people that have been shot. And in the real sense, there is a percentage of people that are believing and now have the gonads to say exactly what they feel. They have been doing it all along, but they've been hiding. And that's all it is. So when we get to the point where we have to train and let our kids understand this is kind of the way it is, I don't see where it's going to change in this country. You know, unless we all become, and I don't even know if that would happen, but unless we all become of the same race, the same creed, the same color, and I doubt if that happens because we're such a diverse nation and we've had so many different types of people come in and we're getting better with the blending, but we've got a long, long way to go until we get there.
Tarl, thanks so much for your call. Please drive safe out there on 95. I'm glad you're listening. I'm glad you can hear you have Bluetooth, which is a good thing. But let's wrestle with this. I mean, I think if I push back on anything, it would be I think we have had a lot of change. I think the forms have changed. I mean, the overt terrorism of the South and parts of the North were ended. But I think what has happened with the onslaught of videos being taken by phones, the cameras that are in that are placed strategically on light poles and other places and in vehicles that have exposed this kind of police brutality against young black people in this country, especially but young people, period, of color in this country, has shown something that has been a virulent problem in America forever, for a long time. I think that is absolutely true. So the question is then, what is the response to that politically? What do we do to address that politically? I mean, if we look at what's happening, what it has taken, the protests in Chicago after the release of the young man who was killed, the 17-year-old boy who was killed, it took an independent journalist his own investigation to get a court case to force release of the video of Lachlan McDonald shooting. And then what's coming up here in Baltimore. I mean, people are preparing for the worst backlash in Baltimore around the trials of police officers who have been accused in the death of Freddie Gray. So let's just talk about this politically for a moment. I mean, what does all this mean in terms of the politics of the 21st century and where we take this? Because it is a political question ultimately, I think.
I mean, I think the answer is kind of obvious in the sense
What's that?
That you know, there has to be, you know, a reimagining of you know, what governance and what the system is, right? Like, we have to, you know, control our own communities, our own resources, and if that means, you know, possibly taking over local government and going further than that's a tactic. I don't think we have a surefire answer just because if we did, we'd have already done it. But I think that we should come up with as many tactics as possible and try them all just because you know, at this point, racism and all the institutions that support it is like a hydra. And, you know, we can't just cut off one head of it. So you can't just say, oh, it's just the police, because it's not just the police. There's systems that enable them to do what they do and know that they're going to get away with it. Right? And so we have to be, you know, start thinking about that, and we have to reimagine all of these things and come up with new systems and institutions to do this kind of stuff.
And Zoe, I mean, let me let you jump in here, then we're going to go to Jeff, then go to the phones for a last thought on the phones before we have to take a break. But, you know, I was thinking about one of the things Ta-Nehisi Coates said in one of his recent speeches. Ta-Nehisi said, when kind of pushed about the question of going after the police, he said, yeah, we have to confront what the police are doing, but the police are only upholding the incorrect and wrong policies instituted by our government and our society. The policies and the economic structure of our society is what has to be attacked if we can even begin to get the root of it. I just wanted to throw that out there because I think that's a piece of the discussion we have to have. But Zoe, go ahead.
Yeah, I really agree with that. And I think that if you really want to tackle racism at the institutional level, you have to look at things like housing policy. And, you know, it just as an example, it goes way beyond the police. I think, but before you can pass those kinds of specific policies and build political will for them, I think the sort of big picture task is to somehow cut off the way that politicians are using fear to divide and mobilize people against other factions, right? I think that's what's really significant about what's happening right now, is that the GOP's currency is fear and is terror. And so I think as long as people are motivated by that fear and are looking for something to attach it to, you're going to have these kinds of racial and class divisions that prevent any kind of actual progressive policy solutions.
Jeff, you want to leap in on that before we open the phones again?
Yeah, let's think of fear as an aspect of ideology. And as the social philosopher Jonathan Joseph has pointed out, ideology is the mortar, the social mortar between the bricks of the system of capitalism. And the fear is a part of the way that system of capitalism is being maintained. As Relik said, yes, we should be taking over the levers of government because they are ours, but we have allowed them to become alienated from us.
That's really very powerful. You know, is that Jonathan Joseph from Britain?
Yes.
That's right. Okay, I wasn't sure. Just make sure I have the right philosopher when you were saying that. Make sure I have the right person. Interesting. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Will, line one. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing today?
Very well. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks a lot. I've never called into this show. I called in on an even show, but I never called into this show.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. What I really wanted to start off by saying is, well, I want to start with the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. Inside the Constitution, it pegs what is called as an African-American as three-fifths of a human being. So with that being said, they're not going to treat us like we are anything above that. They want to treat us like something lower than that. But the Bible says that first shall be last and last shall be first. And this is why the outrage across the whole world right now against the colored people or the lower class. I'm not a racist. I'm a humanist, and I'm for anything that's human. So like the last caller said, it would take for us all to be on the same page and do the same thing at the same time for anything like what we want to happen from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, the Martin Luther Kings, the Noble Drew Alis, the Malcolm X's. Everybody has gone forth and become a prophet or ancestor who has laid the foundation for a change, but the change has yet to come. So it would take people like the small people, the people of the lower class, the homeless people, the people who have nothing, to collect and become one voice and be the change that they want to see, as opposed to saying, oh, we need to stop crime in the neighborhoods, go to the neighborhoods. Oh, there's too many vacant houses in the neighborhood, go fix one up. And that's what I say, and I'll leave it at that.
Well, thank you so much. I think that's an interesting thought. I mean, that's about the people coming, the poor people, the people least among us, to come together as a political force is one of the ways for change. In alliance with others and make a huge change. But let me get our closing thoughts on this particular issue here. One of the things that our Guardian letter, an article in the Guardian, let me just throw this out there as we conclude, is that this attack in Minneapolis was a overt threat to scare all black people and people protesting in America. It was to kind of strike fear into the hearts of people that if you stand up, you're going to get shot down. I think that's a piece that we cannot forget as well, that people are standing up to that and that it happens throughout our history. It's happening right now. But our closing thoughts, Raleigh Kayes.
I would say that, you know, that if fear was the only thing, particularly for black protesters, we would have stopped a long time ago. I vividly remember, you know, this time last year, this exact day last year, actually, when the no indictment decision came down and Block led a protest. And we took over 83, and we had more cops in Baltimore City than I'd ever seen at that point, you know, pre-uprising. And, you know, yes, I was scared, but I have to move past that fear because it's bigger than just me. And, you know, so I would be like the Minneapolis protesters, and I would stay out there even if, you know, shots rang out. Actually, as we're talking, I'm just remembering that there was a guy this time last year, a driver, who had a gun in his car who waved it at us as we were coming off the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has already happened, but it requires us to, you know, understand that this is bigger than us and that, you know, freedom isn't free.
Zoe Carpenter.
Yeah, I think just focusing on the movement right now, I think what we are seeing is that the movement for racial justice, which isn't solely focused on racial justice, but that movement is very strong and it's growing. And while the attacks like those in Minneapolis are horrific, and we can hope that there would be no more like them, I think compared to the urgency that the protesters have and compared to the energy, they're certainly not going to stop it. And I think that, you know, nothing gets done politically without, you know, pressure from the people. And I think that's the positive thing I would keep in mind right now, because it has been a pretty grim couple of weeks.
That's a very, very important point, I think, Zoe. Jeff?
It has been grim on the one hand, but in the spirit of the dialectic, it's also been inspiring. And I was asked what I was thankful for Thanksgiving, and it's uprisings. There's so much renewed energy at creating justice all across college campuses, but out in the streets as well.
I want to thank three of you. Zoe Carpenter, it's always great to have you with us, the nation's assistant Washington editor. Thank you so much once again for joining us, and have a great holiday weekend.
Thanks. My pleasure. You too.
And Raleigh Kayes, coordinator for Be More Block and much more. Always good to have you on the show, brother, and thank you for coming at the last minute, and you have a good holiday as well. Okay, I guess he's gone already. And we'll be right back. Jeff Singer, thank you so much for being part of this program as well. We're going to come right back. When we come back, we are going to tackle what's happening in potential what's happening with the trials coming up this week. Dwight Pettit joins us once again, so stay with us. Don't go away.